Call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 9 a.m. We're in the State Capitol Senate Finance meeting. Please silence your cell phones. Joining me today are Senator Sedman, Senator Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, Senator Cronk, and in the audience we have Senator Giesel. Today's agenda, we have one item on today's agenda. We are going to have the overview of the governor's fiscal year 2027 budget. We have the Office of Management Director, Lacey Sanders. Please come forward, introduce yourself, and give us the presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget for the Governor. And today I have been asked to provide a presentation on the overview of the FY 2027 budget that was delivered to the legislature on December 11th. And with that, I'll get started. If that's okay.
Please proceed.
Great. So to get started this year, I wanted to take a moment to do a little bit of a look back at where we were when we left the legislature last year and the FY 2026 budget was signed into law. So on the slide before us today, we've provided what the price of oil was in the spring 2025 budget. Spring forecast that was used to develop the fiscal year 2026 budget. At that point, the budget was developed on $68 a barrel, and the total revenue coming to the state was just at $1.2 billion. The budget that was enacted into law at that time was just over $6 billion. And if you'll recall, there were vetoes that we will discuss later that brought the amount of the budget down to the $6 billion amount, leaving a surplus of approximately $141 million. At that time, when the governor did the line item vetoes and enacted the bill into law, we were working closely with the Department of Revenue on evaluating what the price of oil was looking like at that point in time, so in June of 2025. And we had seen that we were experiencing as a state a significant decrease in the amount of revenue forecasted compared to the $68 a barrel that was projected in the March budget. Moving forward, into this year's budget that was presented to the legislature, updated.
Can you take a brief, Eddie? Call the meeting back to order. Senator Stedman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as a footnote, I think as I recall, we worked on the budget here at the table at $66 a barrel as a target amount when we put the budget together, even though that number was adjusted when we went through the conference committee. But we take the spring forecast and we look forward even at the end of session and try to factor that in if we looks like we're going to have escalating price or de-escalation. And so
like moving forward to ensure that we're tracking appropriately, especially when we're talking about significant decreases. We saw the price of oil drop from the $68 range down to as low as the $60 range, which is a significant impact to our revenue. So, yes.
Yes, and we have talked with the Department of Revenue and we anticipate to have the spring forecast by March the 13th. Please proceed.
Thank you. So I'm going to move over from the spring 2025 to the fall 2025, which, again, was used in developing the fiscal year this is the fall 2025 update, just to give us a frame of reference on where we are now. So the price of oil has come down to $2.52, approximately a reduction of $200 million in state general fund revenue, leaving us with a surplus and deficit, a deficit of $52 million. And that's before we talk about the supplementals that have been introduced to the legislature. And I will go through those supplementals on the following slides. Those supplementals currently that were introduced in the December budget total about $294 million, leaving us with a deficit of $350 million based on the current price of oil. And as I mentioned, we continue to see that price fluctuate. The Department of Revenue does do an excellent job at keeping us posted, and we're all monitoring closely. And again, we'll have that forecast in the spring 2026, as you said, Chair Hoffman, in March. So we'll continue to monitor. So if there are no questions, further questions on this slide, I'll move us forward to the 2027 proposed budget by the governor. As we started developing this budget in the fall, as we noted, the spring forecast had a much higher number for revenue proposed for their fiscal year 2027 at $67 a barrel, bringing us to about $3.3 billion in general fund revenue. In the fall forecast, we saw that decrease by about $5 a barrel, bringing us down to $62, and again, bringing that number down about $120 million. So as we started working on the governor's budget, the governor's direction was to meet our contractual obligations in the state. No new initiatives would be moving forward, and to provide the minimum amount necessary as far as matching requirements when we were talking about the capital budget. So just for walking us through the process of what we're looking at a very high level for the governor's budget, if we start with the 2026 as a base, we often talk about with ledge finance an adjusted base. This is prior to that. This is what was passed in the 2026 budget. At the current prices of oil, we would have about $181 million surplus. And then we move down to what we do refer to as the adjusted base, and that is by removing any one-time items that were appropriated in the prior year, providing any contractual salary adjustments that were included based on contracts signed, and then today we'll talk about the changes that are here, which are a total $22.8 million. These are going to be the items that are for things like our debt payments and any contractually required items such as retirement or other items that are fixed costs to the state, and us wanting to make sure that we're meeting the obligations of the state. This brings us down to a total budget of just over $6.1 billion. At this point, we see a remaining surplus of $150 million if we're using the fall forecast update. And then the next line here at the bottom is the increase for the governor to provide a statutory PFD, or permanent fund dividend, in the budget. It adds an increase of $1.7 billion over the prior year's dividend amount. And then you'll see the overall surplus deficit, which is a deficit of just at $1.5 billion. Questions? No? Okay. So moving on, what we refer to as our short fiscal summary. So this is focusing on the unrestricted general funds in the state. At the back of the presentation in the appendices, there is a full fiscal summary. If anybody would like to reference that or has questions on it, it's a lot of detail to walk through in a presentation. So we provided this year the short fiscal summary as a frame of reference. So Same information, just in our standard way of looking at things. We have revenue to the state for fiscal year 2026 and 2027. As we just discussed, last year's total revenue right now is projected at 5.9 or just at $6 billion. In fiscal year 2027, we have approximately $6.2 billion. You do see the slight uptick in the draw from the earnings reserve account based on the percent of market value. That's about $200 million. Moving down, we have the total expenditures for the state broken down by operating, capital, and supplementals, as well as revised programs for a total budget of $5.6 billion in operating and capital items for fiscal year 2026 and $5.4 billion in the governor's proposed budget. Next, we add in the total appropriations for the permanent fund dividend. As we just spoke, you see the increase of just over $1.7 billion here, and you see the overall deficits that we spoke about on the previous slide. As a frame of reference, we have provided the current balance, or excuse me, the balances identified as of December 2025 for our savings account, the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. The governor's budget currently pulls, the deficit is proposed to be pulled from the CBR.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Ms. Sanders. I noticed that in the FY27 proposal, there's no placeholder for supplementals. And I can't think of a year in the last 25 or 28 where there haven't been supplementals. It's a very large and complex operation with a lot of things that can come at you during a fiscal year. When we finished the budget last year, there was an attempt to include some headroom. Is there an attempt to either include some headroom here, or ought we include a placeholder for some sort of supplemental?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, for fiscal year 2027, we do not have a placeholder for supplementals. I think happy to have conversations about whether we should include headroom or include a percent or a number amount. I will say it has been very difficult to project what supplementals amount is the appropriate amount to put in, but a number could be determined or agreed upon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just never seen a year where there hasn't been one, so I think truth in budgeting and doing our job, we gotta stick something on that line.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Stedman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those lines, I think one of the in a broader concept, we're talking about looking forward several years, and I think some form of a planning process that needs to take place, and we're going to work on that over the next couple of months, but it's really difficult to get a beginning value to start from when we don't have, as Senator Keel mentioned, some headroom, which is normal. And then but there's some big in the supplemental, and we can see that in just fire, right? And if we're going to use 5 years, 3 years, 7 years, we should have some agreed upon policy. Clearly, the one didn't work last year when we did fire, and then we had a veto and a month and a half later a request for the money back. That's embarrassing. But we also, in here, we don't have anything for K-12 maintenance. We had nothing in last year's budget. I assume that the administration supports some form of K-12 maintenance, general school maintenance. We had there's nothing in here for the university in maintenance. I assume that, again, and maybe falsely so, that there's an interest in maintaining our infrastructure. There's nothing in here for courts and general maintenance. It looks a little light across the board. So I would encourage the administration, when they come forward with their adjustments to the budget here in a couple of weeks, they factor those in, because if the position of the administration is to have no maintenance for infrastructure, it is very difficult to get any agreements going forward on virtually anything in the future. Because I don't think the public's going to support our schools falling down around our kids' ears. So, and I don't know what numbers the administration would want to put forward. I would just suggest zero is not appropriate. Some number. So we have some basis for that discussion. And then we'll agree or disagree on that particular number. And we recognize if we have an opinion higher than the governor, it's very easy for him to remove it down to his proposed number. So there's no question about that. But there is a concern that we have a much more tightly agreed upon base number to work from.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. In fact, we've had a school collapse that was in my district in Antioch. So already there's a need to address those children and where they're going to be going to school in the future. Do you have a response, Ms. Sanders?
Thank you, Chair Hoffman. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, our state is in a difficult position right now. We continue to rely on a very volatile revenue source in the state, and we continue to have conversations about year after year about what is the right level of an appropriation for a variety of items. I think this budget was intended to provide the base level of what we are required to pay based on the statutes, and we need to have a very direct conversation about what we will continue to fund and how we're going to fund those things. The governor is open to conversations about revenue, about a fiscal plan, about looking forward. We're happy to sit down and have those conversations so that we can ensure that all of the pieces in the state are addressed as they should be, including our schools and the funding for deferred maintenance in the state. Those are two components of a broad number of items that, frankly, should be funded in this state, but we just don't have the resources to direct that money there. So, again, I'm happy to participate in those conversations and coming up with a plan or developing a methodology on how we calculate certain things. If we talk about disasters. Yes, the governor vetoed down disaster relief funding, and then we had unexpected costs that have are difficult to project when it comes to disasters. This year's budget, we proposed a 10-year average. This would include the 2018 earthquake. It would include, two of the items for typhoons that we've experienced amongst many, many other disasters. So we appreciate the conversation and trying to determine the best way to calculate those things. But I think we also recognize that some of these things are unpredictable. So, again, happy to have conversations as we move forward through this process.
Senator Stedman.
Just another brief comment on one other item, that's the dividend. We all recognize there's a statutory dividend in the system, and the governor's required to put a budget on the table December 15th. So it's not surprising that he has the statutory dividend in there. I would suggest that you modify that in the upcoming amendments you're going to put on the table, because if the position is no maintenance and a $1.5 billion deficit, you'll be lucky if we just don't hand you back the budget with all that in it and watch the action, and it won't be pleasant. So I would recommend if the governor supports the 50-50, puts the amendment in. He followed his responsibilities in December, so let's try to get a real view of the administration's position of where they'd like to see the budget. Now, we can go from there. You might find we agree with almost all of it.
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Stedman. Happy to have a conversation with the governor about that recommendation or ask. And we'll, again, be bringing any amendments forward. I think it's the 30th legislative day.
Thank you, Stacy. Please proceed.
Right, on to slide number five. This is an annual snapshot that's provided on the operating budget. It's a comparison from fiscal year 2026's budget to fiscal year 2027's budget on unrestricted general funds. This slide is often referred to as the swoop graph. As you can see, moving from right to left, smallest amount of general funds moving all the way to the largest proposed use of general funds. Our formula programs continue to utilize a significant portion of the budget. 40% of the operating budget is tied to Medicaid and K-12 foundation formula. Moving on to slide number six, I wanted to take an opportunity to talk through just a few of the changes that are proposed. Again, this isn't every single change. I anticipate your Senate Finance Subcommittees will work through each department's budget, but wanted to touch on a few things. So starting at the top of the page with the Department of Administration, we have the implementation of the statewide information technology classification study. You may recall discussions last year where the Department of Administration's Division of Personnel completed that study. This year's budget includes the increments to address the cost of implementing that study. We have two significant transitions. One is for Shared Services of Alaska, or SSOA. This is where our travel and accounts payable has been processed in the past. These functions will be returning to all of the departments. So throughout the budget, throughout each of the agencies' budgets, you'll see those transfers of positions back to the departments. This is intended to reduce the duplication of work that we were seeing with those functions. So we were having agencies enter information as well as Shared Services of Alaska. So in an effort to reduce those redundancies and address inefficiencies, we're moving those individuals back into the departments. The other transition that we have is payroll services. So we had surveyed each of the departments to determine how things were going and whether they had recommendations for changes associated with payroll services. This is an area where we strive to find improvements to ensure that our state employees are receiving their pay timely and accurately. So through that, we had eight agencies that identified their request would be to have payroll services within their agencies. One interesting note is that for payroll services, it tends to be our agencies that have pretty technical contracts or more technical contracts, such as in the Department of Corrections or in the Department of Public Safety, where they have an increased complexity when it comes to processing that payroll. There is payroll services that will be retained within the Department of Administration's Division of Finance for some of the other agencies that did not have a desire to take on that task. The governor's budget includes the implementation of Executive Order 137, which establishes the Department of Agriculture. These are transfers from the Department of Natural Resources into the new department, and those are classified as agency transfers between the two. Lastly, in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, two items that are just noting is the continuation of $2.2 million for the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. This is related to the continued efforts that they are tasked with as they work on the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Pipeline Development. As well as the second bullet, which is funding the Alaska Energy Authority's Power Cost Equalization Program at $44 million from the PCE Endowment Fund. Happy to take any questions.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, this is an intriguing set of proposals in DOA. I'm thinking back to a couple of years ago when at the subcommittee level we proposed decentralizing payroll services for those agencies with the most complex and technical contracts. Marine Highway, Corrections, Public Safety. Can't remember where we got with wildland firefighting. That might or not have been in there. And the administration was adamant that they not be decentralized. I think we reached detente on Marine Highway Systems. Then the other thing that came out of the admin subcommittee about, I think it was 2 years ago, was a look at centralized services and which ones might be decentralized and which ones were working and saving money. And the agency documented significant workflow efficiency and saved money from accounts payable and travel. So we didn't decentralize those. I think we moved the IT help desks. What happened?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I can't speak to what happened of several years ago. I'm sorry, off the top of my head, I don't recall the conversations that were surrounding this. There are still functions of shared services of Alaska that will be retained in the Division of Finance. Those are mostly for collections, where you had revenue collection. And so I can't speak to what was provided as far as this is the savings that we're seeing or experiencing. As you're aware, we've had the executive orders that were implemented over the interim from the governor identifying where we have efficiencies. There were a lot of conversations throughout agencies about duplication of efforts in the processes that we had established for travel specifically. And I think that is where we really identified what workflows were occurring, and as well as the timeliness and ensuring that we were processing things timely to get us to year end. And so at this point, that was how that item came about. Payroll services for the state of Alaska has been something that we have dealt with. I know we had conversations about it last year and the difficulties that we were seeing. And, it's very important for the governor that our employees are being paid timely and accurately. And if transferring payroll services back to agencies that understand the complexity or understand the details that are their staff are facing when it comes to payroll services, we should make every effort. If that's going to be an improvement for them, let's do that so that we can ensure that our people are getting paid timely and accurately. That was how the conversation came about.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's few things more boring to the general public than the inner guts of state agencies.
Yes.
It is an essential part of our job, shared job, of delivering state services well and at the lowest effective cost. So I'm looking forward to admin budget subcommittees that could put a cow in a coma, but I'll be looking for details and numbers, and we'll be looking to figure out what's different so that we understand what really is the best way to move forward. So I appreciate that, and I'm hopeful for a real productive conversation.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair, to Ms. Sanders. The payroll processing and all of that implies kind of a heavy IT workload, I would assume, for the infrastructure, the systems to handle all that. Are there any major IT projects that are going on right now to try and improve the processes of managing payroll, and how is that affected by the transition from centralized to decentralized?
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, right now our payroll is processed through the state's accounting system, which is it's referred to as IRIS. So there will need to be modifications as we workflow, right? The agencies that are getting payroll back, there will have to be changes. We anticipate those changes are already underway as far as coordinating and working with the agencies on what things will look like. We have from now until July 1 when this would be implemented. We're talking about phased approaches so that certain agencies will take on their responsibilities ahead of time, or the individuals would take on, getting assigned to their agencies and getting aligned with what the business needs are within that agency. So other than those workflows, issues, I don't see a significant change in IT or a new system, so to speak.
Senator Kaufman?
No, it's the will of the committee. I'd like to just look in a little bit more on the progress on that, if there are any issues, any resource needs that we're not addressing or unaware of.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Senator Cronk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I appreciate the transition of payroll services back to some departments, because that was a really big issue in my district with DOT, and we were caught up in tons of different issues there. But I have a quick question, because I know we're way out of compliance. Is there any money in the budget for a new locality pay study? Because it's been way overdue.
Through the chair, Senator Cronk, you're referring to like a geographical differential study. Not at this time. There is nothing in the budget.
Thank you, Senator Cronk. I might comment upon the use of $44 million in the out of the power cost equalization fund for the Energy Authority. There has been numerous attempts to try to use this fund for other purposes. The concept of power cost equalization isn't even close. When you have the rail belt having energy costs, electric costs around 5 cents, you have communities like Lyme Village spending $1. So if you look at the power cost equalization fund, it's not equalizing the rates. We should be striving to spend money to try to equalize those rates, as the title says, instead of spending the money on programs that administer it. This has been the historic use of those funds, and that's where we should be striving to assist those communities that are struggling with high cost of electricity. This has nothing to say about the high cost of heating, which is sometimes 5 to 10 times higher in rural Alaska than you afford yourself. So I would not look kindly at cracking that bank open for this purpose at this time.
Thank you for that, Chair Hoffman.
Please proceed.
Okay, moving on to slide 7, we have starting with the Department of Education and Early Development. So the foundation program and pupil transportation programs are funded at the statutory level. That was passed last session. There are two increases drawing from the Higher Education Investment Fund for the costs associated with the Alaska Performance Scholarships, as well as the Alaska Education Grants. In the Department of Health, we have a continuation of the senior benefits program being funded at the being fully funded at the statutory level, and we have two increases associated with federal receipts. The Division of Public Health has several grants that they anticipate receiving and will be distributing, and then as well as in behavioral health, we have $585,000 for the Crisis Contact Center. Under the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, we have a one-time increment of $1.4 billion of state general funds. This is due to two things. One, we have several years ago, when the reverse sweep was not continued, the Workers' Safety and Compensation Administration account receipts, also known as WSCA, were swept at the end of the year, leaving their balance in that fund as zero. These are collected from individuals. They're contributions that the Department of Labor collects into this account to be used for workers' compensation. And that account was drawn down to zero. Secondarily to that, we've had a decline in revenue as those Alaskan businesses are becoming safer. The amount that's deposited into this account is not sufficient. And so there is an appropriation of $1.4 million to bring that account back up for fiscal year 2027.
Senator Stedman?
I guess the sweep discussion, Mr. Chairman, goes back several years. But my understanding is you couldn't sweep funds that were like employer money. So are we, is this just going back and doing an accounting reversal to put us back into compliance?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, kind of. this account is subject to the sweep. There have been conversations with legislative audit about this account and how those receipts should not have been swept, but how the fund is established in statute requires it to be swept. It would require a change in statute to change the designation of it being sweepable, and that statute has not been addressed. So this is an effort to ensure that we can continue the operations of the workers' compensation, replenish the receipts that were taken or swept and into the CBR. So it's twofold, really.
Senator Stedman.
Just a follow-up on that one. So the I understand that it's subject to the sweep. But the question is all the funds subject to the sweep? And I think that's where the question is, so we'll have to drill into that. And obviously they're not, because there's a request here to backfill it. So there's some issues there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
Oh, if we could, if we're done with, I thought maybe somebody else would have a question. I just want to make a quick comment on the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. You know, I don't know what's coming at us in the next couple of years with our gas pipeline. But, you know, we've been told we're going to need about 8,000 workers in the state to build this, just our little in-state 42-inch line, which is a colossal project in itself. And of that 8,000 workers, Mr. Chairman, we probably have next to zero, because everybody, pretty much everybody that's got a skill set for the oil patch is already working in the oil patch. Everybody with other skill sets are already employed. So it looks to me like we're going to have a massive invasion of out-of-state workers to get this built. And I think, Mr. Chairman, we should be giving some consideration to how we are going to get some of our younger workers around the state jobs on this project. If they're everything from working in the man camps to driving trucks to, you know, being oilers, whatever the jobs may be. So I think we should have some conversation. We have a pipeline training center in Fairbanks, and we've got the Teamsters trying to come up with a training program. And a driving range for truck driving. You can't just get in a semi with long sections of pipe and start dragging it up to the North Slope. That's not going to happen. So I think we need to give that some serious thought. I guess the training program seemed to be not geared up anywhere close to the time frame that we've been presented for this gas line, if we get it, right? So I think we should give that some consideration, Mr. Chairman, as we go forward and ask the administration to take a look at that, because the more Alaska employees we have on this project, the better off the state's going to be. I don't want to see all 8,000 people come from Arkansas and Texas and Alberta and everywhere else and the other oil patches, North Dakota, wherever they're going to come from.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
If I may, through the chair, Senator Stedman, the governor did introduce a piece of legislation on the unemployment trust fund and designating a portion of that revenue towards training in the state. I know that bill will probably be before this committee at some point. The governor is, as you are, concerned with ensuring that we have Alaskans ready and prepared and trained to address the pipeline needs in the state. So moving on to slide number 8, starting with the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, we have deposits into the deposits into the Disaster Relief Fund. For fiscal year 2026, we see a deposit of approximately $40 million as a supplemental that I noted earlier in the slide. Of that $294 million, there is $40 million for the Disaster Relief Fund. And then in fiscal year 2027, we have $24 million deposited of general funds into the Disaster Relief Fund along with our federal receipts estimate. Again, as I noted earlier, we are working towards some type of methodology that can be agreed upon. This was a 10-year average that was utilized. It would have captured the 2018 earthquake as well as the two typhoons that the state has experienced so far. In the Department of Natural Resources, we have two items. The first two bullets, these are previous capital appropriations that are being moved into the operating budget. We have tried to evaluate what we have in the capital budget to ensure that it aligns with being the definition of a capital project. The National Historic Preservation Fund grant, as well as the Critical Minerals Mapping Earth MRI program, are both ongoing operating projects, programs that shouldn't be projects in the capital budget, but should really be reflected as ongoing operating. Additionally, as noted earlier, we have the deposit into the Fire Suppression Fund. We have noted on here the first fiscal year 2026, $55 million of state general funds. These were made as fire declarations to the legislature. And then for fiscal year 2027, we have $47 million of unrestricted general funds being deposited into the fund, along with the language associated with the statutory designated program receipts and $20 million estimate for federal funds.
Can you explain for the audience, under the disaster relief for FY26, the $40 million, you have it listed as supplemental, but in the fire suppression for 2026, the $55 million, you just say fire declarations.
Chair Hoffman, Director Painter at Ledge Finance and I spoke in an effort to not duplicate counting that we had already transmitted the fire declarations to the legislature and received concurrence on those. We did not officially submit transactions for that because we didn't want to double count. I'm happy to work with Director Painter on how we want to ensure this is accurately reflected in the budget. The $40 million for the Disaster Relief Fund, we send over the initial declarations. Generally, those come over as about $1 million each, and then we amend them as we move forward. We temporarily borrow, are temporarily borrowing money from other capital projects as the fund reaches a zero balance of actually spending money out of the fund. So the $40 million general fund supplemental is needed to recapitalize the fund, whereas the fire declarations, we've already transferred the money into that fund so that we can respond to fires.
The reason that I bring this up, I believe the proper methodology would be a supplemental. We should not be using what's referred to as ratifications in the current year, because ratifications are for the previous fiscal year. So fundamentally, I would say that it would be bad accounting practices to spend money in this current fiscal year and then use the word of ratifications for for that because it bypasses the budgetary process. So that should be taken into consideration. There should be some public policy regarding that for clarification, not only for this year, but for future years.
Chair Huffman, happy to talk through how that looks technically from a budget perspective. That's not a problem.
Thank you.
Lastly,
Senator Stedman.
Oh, wait till she's done with the slide. We got a question on the slide.
Sorry, I threw the chair. I just wanted to notice the last two items that I hadn't spoke about, which were under the Department of Public Safety. So there is $1.3 million in general funds for the continuation of the body-worn and in-car camera operations and equipment. This is something that was previously funded to start in the capital budget. It is continuing. Again, we're moving this, asking for a new appropriation of general funds now that those federal funds are no longer available in the operating budget. And lastly, $550,000 of receipt authority so that we can continue to provide training and certification to our law enforcement officials, including village police officers and others, community law enforcement officers.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. Senator Stedman.
Just a couple of things. I want to make a point on the last item, Mr. Chairman, Department of Public Safety. I think we need to, when we focus on our training programs so we can have our Alaskans working on this big project, let's not lose sight that the public safety issue is going to be enhanced. In fact, it's probably a lot bigger issue than most people realize, except for maybe some of the ones that were here in the 70s and saw it. So we need to make sure that we're not caught short on that issue. And then the other broader point I want to make is what happened. We need a three-quarter vote to fund this supplemental. Where are you going to get your three-quarter vote? And what happens if we don't have a three-quarter vote?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, a three-quarter vote is required and in order to access the CBR. If the votes are not there from the bodies, then we'll have to determine next steps, and I don't know what that looks like.
Senator Stedman.
Well, I'd like to know what they are. I think we should have that in the discussion. Clearly, when we get into three-quarter votes, a lot of times it gets very expensive, meaning we end up spending more. It's the exact opposite of what it was intended for. And then on the accounting process, in the event that that does happen, how does that impact our finances and how does that impact your cash flow? That's one of your key areas you have to struggle with as OMB director.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Stedman. I think the last time I checked, cash flow purposes are about $500 million to $1 billion in the CBR, so we do need to pay close attention to that. And we do need to determine what our options are if a CBR vote is not going to be accessible.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Sanders, under the subject of Department of Public Safety, one of the key elements of the governor's State of the State speech was sounded like a task force or some effort to improve the crime rates in Anchorage. And I'm just wondering, is that just resource redeployment, or is there anything there that would incur cost in order to staff or to somehow focus on that as a key priority?
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, there is no like specific line item in the budget to address that. I can follow up with the Department of Law and the Department of Public Safety to see if there are what their plan is or what they're envisioning. I have not been part of those immediate conversations. So,
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair. That would be great. It'd be nice to see what the meat and potatoes are behind that, since it was highlighted and given that elevated status in the discussion. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Please proceed, Ms. Sanders.
So moving on to our slide 9, our Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. There are several items on the first two bullets that are restoring funding levels that were proposed reductions from last year. So in highways and aviation's maintenance, there is a $5.2 million increase to restore that funding that was reduced last year, as well as a $1.3 million for the one-time use of Alaska Housing Capital Corporation funds by the legislature. The next two items are using motor fuel taxes that are collected in the state to address statewide guardrail and roadside hardware repair, as well as statewide wayside maintenance costs. And those would be receipts that would be collected under that motor fuel tax. Under statewide items, we have a recapitalization of the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund. This was the amount, just at $130 million, that was drawn from the Constitutional Budget Reserve last year to fill the deficit from overall operations and spending compared to revenue. This is proposed as a direct draw from the CBR. As I noted earlier, the budget does include a full statutory permanent fund dividend, providing approximately $3,650 per Alaskan. And as well, this year we have a $1.4 billion transfer for permanent fund inflation proofing from the earnings reserve account to the principal. And that captures my operating items.
Question on this page, Senator Stedman.
Is any of the supplemental items a request of the legislature, or are they all a request of the administration?
Senator Stedman, I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
It's not a loaded question. I'm trying to point out that the supplemental request are not requests from the legislature. It's requests from the administration to balance the budget, balance the books for FY26 ending the end of this June. Mm-hmm. This is an additional spending being requested by the legislature. Mm-hmm. And it's a request from the administration to balance the books, and it gets back to the three-quarter vote required. In other words, no senator or House member or other body member is requesting additional spending in FY26, to my knowledge.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, thank you for that clarification. Correct. These are requests of the governor that are included in his December budget.
So to put a finer point on it, the supplemental that requires a three-quarter vote is to fund what the governor sees as necessary to complete the services to the people of the state of Alaska for FY26, and all members in the legislature should acknowledge that. Please proceed.
Okay. So slide 10 moves us into the fiscal year 2027 capital budget, mimicking our earlier slide chart. As you can see, the governor's budget is primarily composed of matching funds towards federal funds. So this is unrestricted general funds only. And of that, 82% of our capital budget is specific to matching federal programs. Department of Transportation and Public Facilities has the largest component of that at almost 70% of the capital budget. So if I move on to slide number 11, just a few items to touch on in the capital budget under the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. We have $15.3 million utilizing Ocean Ranger receipts. They would go towards the Alaska Energy Authority towards cruise ship terminal port electrification project. In the Department of Environmental Conservation, those are our two federal programs, one for village safe water and wastewater infrastructure. You can see there's $18 million there towards match. And then $51 million for the Clean Water and Drinking Water Grant Program, which requires $37.8 million in match. In the Department of Fish and Game, we have the continuation of three capital projects that we have seen historically over the last couple years. $3.3 million for the Gulf of Alaska Chinook Salmon Program, $825,000 for continuing the Alaska Marine Salmon Program, and then $6.8 million of federal receipts for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund.
Please proceed.
Moving on to the Department of Health, we have a continuation of our Mental Health Trust capital project for home modification and upgrades for retaining housing. Under the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, we have significant federal receipt authority coming to the state of Alaska, $5 million for public protection and infrastructure support, $27 million for the state's Homeland Security grant programs, $25 million for deferred maintenance, replacement, and renewal. This is specific to armories across the state for the National Guard Bureau, and $1.8 million for the Air National Guard Modernization and Sustainment Project. In the Department of Natural Resources, we have the continuation of the Forest Inventory Initiative in the Susitna and Tanana Valleys, as well as a continuation of our Land and Water Conservation Grant Program. This is $4.8 million. It's a federal program that we match with $1.9 million in state funds. And then lastly, $12 million in federal receipts for our cooperative forestry and fire programs.
Please proceed. Senator Stedman.
Thank you. I just noticed on the Tongass, on the timber receipts for the Forest Inventory Initiative, is there any open items in the Tongass that we need to identify roads that should be actually classified as roads? And maybe you could check and get back to me on that. Senator Keel, I'm sure, would be very interested to also to support Senator Stedman.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I will have to follow up with DNR. I have not had a conversation about, but have heard conversations occurring.
Thank you, Senator Stedman.
Okay. On slide 13, under the Department of Revenue, we have, I didn't want to list every single project, but we have our standard Alaska Housing Finance Corporation annual housing programs. This includes things like senior housing, as well as our public protection or teacher housing programs. The AHFC dividend, $22.9 million of it is used to match those programs. And then within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have our first supplemental item, $70.2 million associated with a statewide transportation improvement plan match. As you will note, this is the item that was utilized reappropriations last session and was vetoed. This would restore that money using specifically unrestricted general funds. Under that, we have the continuation of the fiscal year 2027 budget. So it's $107.8 million in match for those federal programs under the statewide transportation improvement plan for highways and aviation. One new change that we have in the Department of Transportation is the movement of the statewide deferred maintenance capital project. Typically, this funding that comes from the Alaska Capital Income Fund is directed to the Office of the Governor in an effort to reduce paperwork transferring all over. We are placing this within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The Facility Services Division and the Office of Management and Budget will continue to work closely on administering this funding, but will be located is proposed to be located in the Department of Transportation now. And then lastly, we have $27.5 million for the Alaska Marine Highway System vessel overhaul and annual certification and shoreside facilities rehabilitation.
Many legislators have been contacted regarding the funds that the governor vetoed for the statewide transportation match of $70 million. I think many people feel that there is assurances that the funds may not be needed immediately, but for the for the assurances of the businesses out there that depend upon these, I think it would be prudent to take care of this supplemental as early as possible. That would lift the weight off of the concerns of many of the contractors out there. I wonder if you might comment upon that.
Chair Hoffman, so I'm aware of the conversations and the current concerns that have been expressed. In my conversations with Commissioner Anderson, and Commissioner Anderson is my understanding he will be here tomorrow to further this conversation, but the funding isn't needed immediately today. If the legislature chose to pass an appropriation bill early to address this item, that's the prerogative of the two bodies. We have provided it as a supplemental and in a hope that it would be addressed before the end of the session so that DOT has the money to address obligations before the end of the close of the fiscal year.
Thank you. Further questions on this page, Senator Stedman?
Got a couple. Just on this issue here with the match, I think we're going to go into that in detail. I think we're going to go through each individual veto and the ramifications. But at the Senate Transportation Committee last week, as I recall, and Senator Keel was there, that the department felt that they didn't need the money until the end of this budget cycle, that they're okay through September. But we'll go into more detail and put a finer point on that. And clearly, the sooner we get it done, the less concern will be out in the public on the issue. But we're going to try to clarify it exactly what we're dealing with coming up. On another issue, the first item, Department of Revenue, a couple of years ago, we put in a small amount of money to the Alaska Housing Corporation, and they were to play referee between the university, DNR, and mental health on using that pot of money to move some subdivisions forward that were uneconomical, according to those three entities on land they had. And my understanding is that has taken place and it's been well received and has worked. So I think, Mr. Chairman, we should look at that again as a component part of trying to get some land opened up for subdivisions across the state. I think there were most of that funds, if not all of it, was spent up north of southeast, which is fine. The Alaska Housing did the ranking upon the submissions from the university, DNR, and mental health. And I know the governor has got some kind of plan or concept to try to help with that available land issue. So I think we should take a look at those two and possibly combination. But it is something that we did 2 years ago. We didn't have the money last year to add to it, but it was very successful from what I hear. So we can have, Mr. Chairman, at your convenience, maybe have those entities come in and talk about it, because it does get some land out and badly needed housing land out to the public.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed.
So on slide 14, it's just a very brief snapshot of full-time positions budgeted versus full-time positions filled in the state of Alaska and where we are right now. New this year, we added just a frame of reference for where we were last year in December 2024. So approximately 15,000 employees with just over 13,000 filled positions. This is something that the committee has asked for in the past, provided it again this year as just a frame of reference. And I'll go, if it's okay with the committee, I'll move on to slide number 15.
I do have a question on that. In this budget for FY27, have you included a vacancy factor? And if so, what is that percentage?
Chair Hoffman, so each agency is going to have a different vacancy factor. We can follow up with the committee on what each of those are. There is a vacancy factor included in every agency's budget. And so that means that we have short-funded those agencies. If you were to compare having those positions filled 100% of the time, we expect that there will be vacancy in agencies as we're experiencing.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One subject I don't see in here, and that's funding the unfunded liability. My understanding is, again, we're in the very beginning of the budget cycle, but the Alaska Retirement Management Board suggested maybe $106 million. I think the governor submitted $75.3 million. I got two concerns there, Mr. Chairman. One is we recognize the governor's got his veto authority. He can set the number. If we set it above it, he could veto it down. Okay, so there's no issue there of that understanding. But the concern is tackling that unfunded liability. And over the last decade, in 2015 through 25, June of 25 is preliminary numbers, 2015 we added an extra billion in PERS to the unfunded liability. TERS is another issue, but the concept is the same. So over the last decade, since 15 through June of 25, the unfunded liabilities decreased by about $200 million, which is good until you realize we put in $2 billion. And my concern, and I expressed it last year, that we're not getting this unfunded pension liability under control. It's gone on far too long, and it looks like it's going on for the next couple of decades in front of us. But when we spend $2 billion to decrease it 200 over 10 years, $200 million, and we'll go into more detail, I think, in a future hearing on the subject, and this isn't the discussion of the retirement, changing the retirement system. This is just managing the liability that the state has and the liability that the communities have. So we've spent a significant amount of money, and I think we need to take a look at that, Mr. Chairman. It's similar to last year when I brought this out. Last year, I think I used 23 through 13 through 23. These numbers I'm talking about today is 15 through 25, kind of moving along, but the trend is the same. And to me, it's alarming because that money that's going to that unfunded liability could be going into fixing the school that fell down or increasing salaries or teachers are more competitive or fixing the Dalton Highway so we can move our pipe up and down the highway. But we've got to feed this alligator that's on the table every year that very few people recognize or even want to talk about because it's kind of ugly. And we can't avoid it. So anyway, Mr. Chairman, I just thought I'd maybe hear from what the administration's viewpoint is. And if those numbers seem to be off from what you submitted compared to the request from the Arm Board.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. So, you know, the Arm Board goes through a pretty meticulous process of looking at a variety of scenarios on an annual basis on what they can do to address future costs, the unfunded liability, and you know, they have very talented and expertise available to them. They went through that process. They made a recommendation. Unfortunately, due to our fiscal environment, the governor chose to continue with a previous methodology that extended or provided a smaller appropriation in the budget and continued the rate smoothing out into the future. I do not pretend to be an expert in retirement. There are very talented people that can come before this committee and explain, but what we're seeing, you know, we've had a lot of conversations in the past about 10-year plans and 5-year plans and what the future looks like, and we have a short period of about 5 years where the state's resources, based on projected revenue and what, you know, production that we have coming into the state, don't quite meet the needs of the state of Alaska. After that 5-year period, we start to see other projects coming online and revenues start to increase. And maybe after that five-year period is when we can start to address larger items such as the unfunded liability. But right now, until we have a fiscal plan in place, we are limited in our ability to fund everything.
Senator Stedman.
Just as a quick follow-up, we'll go in more detail on just the handling this unfunded liability, which, again, is a separate issue than other conversations and other legislation. But as I recall last year, the municipality is capped at 22% of the aggregate payroll for the unfunded liability. Roughly 13% of that's going for or created by the unfunded liability, and the state picks up north of 22%. You take a look at Anchorage, Fairbanks, Ketchikan, Kenai, pick your town, right? 13% of the aggregate city hall's payroll is going to this unfunded liability, and that comes out of property tax or sales tax. It's got to come out. It's coming out of the height of the average Alaskan that owns a home. And the quicker we can get this under control and eliminated, that's a huge burden on all the communities. I don't know what the 13% payroll of Anchorage or any other communities around there, Palmer, Wasilla, all of them. I mean, they're massive dollars. So it is a concern. I'm heading towards retirement the next several years. I'd like to see my property tax go down. But I don't think I'm going to live long enough on this one, the way it looks, fortunately, Mr. Chairman.
Are you worried about collecting your retirement? Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those are beautiful words at the end there about where Senator Stedman is heading. Mr. Chairman, in this, there's not actually a lot of daylight between me and the senator sitting to my right. I recall in 2014 when one of the co-chairs of this committee at this table was behind a move that re-amortized our obligations and pushed payments off into the far distant future. It was part of why, after, you know, in the intervening 10 or 11, 12 years of making payments, we haven't paid down the lump sum, because it was a deliberate choice to shift the payoff out in time, out toward the end. And the reason for that was the dream of the next big boom. The reason for that was made explicit. It was said right on the record at this table. We want to keep cash around for our equity investment in the gas line. That's closer today than it's ever been. I heard that recently, but I can't remember where. So, Mr. Chairman, I guess I, with great respect, for the difficulty of balancing this budget, I'm not sure that shorting the pension obligations that we have or shorting the ARM board's recommendation so that in just a few years when the gas line comes, everything will be fine. I'm not sure that's a strategy that's likely to work for Alaskans. Certainly if we'd done it in 2014, we'd be in a world of hurt today. So. May not be the place to scrimp.
Well, it's just like the conversation that's going on today about mortgages. You have a 25-year mortgage, and people are talking about extending that to a 50-year mortgage. That's just bad financial decisions. Thank you, Senator Keel. Sanders, please proceed.
Continuing the conversation about vacancy rates, just providing a snapshot of where we are currently, as of December. So statewide, 15.3%. You can see across the agencies where each of those land, and then where we are overall as a state, and providing a history going back to 2017. Excuse me. So just providing information that has been requested from the committee.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, just quick question. So the staffing, and as shown here, and with respect to the Administrative Order 358, hiring, is there a criticality process or something that helps decide where we really need expertise? And so, and I guess the contracting plan, sort of the holistic plan of managing expertise in the view of staffing of vacancies, openings. If you have somebody in a critical area, I don't know, financial management or IT, are we able to get the people that we need for the ongoing operations that we need to do?
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, so there's just two remarks that I'll share with the committee just off the top of my head. So, yes, we do have a waiver process that I am involved in as well. The commissioners are also involved in evaluating exactly what positions they're looking to fill. We have natural attrition between retirements and people leaving state government and or transferring within state government to other jobs. And so, yes, the departments work, you know, very closely with the Office of Management and Budget to outline what the critical nature of that position is and why it is so important to continue to fill that position. There are blanket exemptions that were included in the executive order for personnel such as troopers and correctional officers, but there is also a waiver process that we have implemented that people go through. I think the other note that I'll just say is, you know, as we've seen the decrease in state revenues, you know, that really is pushing us to want to ensure that we are filling positions that are most critical or that could be delayed, for example. And, you know, I don't ever want to be in a position where we have a crash in the market and oil drops down to $40 a barrel and we're trying to figure out what we do to move forward to get us through the fiscal year. So in an effort to, you know, be proactive, it's good for us to evaluate. And I will say, we don't just focus on administrative positions. Administrative positions are also key to making sure the operations of the state are continuing to function as they should and that we are meeting the expectations of, you know, reporting to the federal government, closing out a fiscal year, ensuring that payroll gets met. So we do take that very seriously in ensuring that we're getting positions filled as quickly as possible. One thing we run into is in the state, we may not get applicants, and that is something that departments face all the time. Sometimes they put a job out there and they don't get an applicant, and, you know, we have to extend. So it's twofold on the administrative order: one, scrutinizing how we're proceeding with filling, but then also how do we get applicants to apply for jobs in the state of Alaska.
Thank you,
Senator Kaufman. Thank you, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sanders, can you talk to us a little bit about how long that waiver process is taking? I'm trying to remember the Fall Permanent Fund Corporation board meeting. They said investment officers were, I think, plus 45 days to be able just to put them out there. Has that improved?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I have seen waivers move as quickly as 5 business days. 45, there may be a certain reason that one particular happened to happen that way, but we do get them transferred through the process fairly quickly.
Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. It'd be good to get maybe some numbers, mean and median, something like that. It is concerning that we're still in this place. I understand when the price of oil first dropped, but agencies are having real trouble. Very few agencies have people, have positions filled that are doing stuff that's not real important. Those jobs got cut a long time ago. And so I'm talking to folks in agencies who aren't able to move forward their efficiency projects. IT projects like the one Senator Kaufman talked about earlier in the meeting that stand to save the state real resources in the future, they're stalled. The agency has something else they have to bring forward, and they can't bring everything to get a waiver. So you are rapidly running into real challenges within the executive branch in, A, getting the work done, but in, B, getting the work done efficiently for Alaskans. Do you have any prediction on how long this, this it's got to go to the governor's office system is going to stay in place?
Ms. Sanders?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I see it continuing into the future. I think there is always an opportunity to evaluate the positions that are being requested for recruitment. You know, there are examples that we find where there is opportunity to find efficiencies with positions doing work. And, you know, sometimes that takes reviewing the positions and seeing what duties are they doing and how can we do it differently. And if it's okay with the chair, if I can proceed to the next slide.
Please proceed.
Because I think...
Boyd, Senator,
oh, sorry.
Stedman.
Are we on six, still on slide 16?
Yep.
Or, well, 15?
Okay, no, I got questions on 16.
Okay. Chair Hoffman, that was where I wanted to go with my remarks, if it's okay. So, you know, setting aside Administrative Order 358 and moving into the next two administrative orders that we've been working under in the state. So I'm going to start with Administrative Order 359 and budget efficiencies. So this is obviously one that is directed to the Office of Management and Budget. My team is working very closely with all state agencies. And so there are two primary projects that we have been engaged in over the last several months since the administrative order came on. One is specific to a review with our licensing and permitting committees. We had a contractor come in and work closely with Environmental Conservation, Natural Resources, Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, when you're talking about corporations and business and professional licensing. And they did a comprehensive review of the work that they are tasked with, as well as what systems they use and how they process and the timeliness of that process. They came up with over 50 recommendations where we have opportunity to streamline the work that we do in an effort to serve our constituents better. How can we reduce the wait time associated with processing a license? How can we make things more easily accessible online? And the second phase of this review was creating roadmaps, so to speak, of all 50-plus recommendations that they have and how many of the things that our state agencies do could be siloed work and making it so that DEC and Environmental Conservation and Natural Resources are talking amongst one another. So all of this under this budget efficiency is trying to do just what we're talking about with our personnel, which is We're not looking to get rid of personnel. We're looking to find ways and use tools that increase our ability to be efficient in the state and ensure that we're doing what we should be doing to meet the best need, the purpose of the agency in serving our Alaskans. The other piece to this project that OMB took on was a grant dashboard. So it's out there on our OMB website. It goes back historically, and it provides detailed information on the amount, the recipient, what it was for at a very high level. But all of that grant information is out there so that people can start to see where the money in the state is going. Secondarily to that, we had Administrative 360 that came out on this at the same time. This is regulatory reform. And so each of the departments has been working closely with the Office of the Governor to go through several steps right now, which is and working with the Department of Law to develop a pathway to review all of the regulatory regulations that are out there, any guidance documents that are out there, and materials that are used in that regulation process. And the intention is to really, one, capture the scope of what we have out there, but as well start a process of going through and reviewing what regulations are out there and how we can simplify our regulation process to be less burdensome and less outdated, as a matter of fact. I mean, we talk about, you know, laws getting passed and regulations being put into place, and oftentimes when we are so busy, we don't go back and review why we're doing something or why we have the steps that we are requiring businesses or Alaskans to go through. So very high level, those are the administrative orders, and I'm happy to take questions if there are any.
Other questions? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On 359, you know, I've worked with, along with many people at the table here, numerous OMB directors. And the first two bullet items, I assume they were all doing, including your position now, which I think you are. In fact, I can only think of one OMB director in my 20-some years that I would question didn't address these first two bullet items, just as in a normal operation. So I just thought I would mention that to the public. This is ongoing. It's not something, a new directive on high, all of a sudden we're going to look, have OMB directors look in this direction. But the third item down, the focus on grants and for non-state entities and accounts payable, I guess we'll drill into that in detail. I don't know quite what that is. But I just thought I'd mention that, Mr. Chairman, that the first two bullets have been ongoing for decades.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, can you bring us up to speed a little bit, especially on this last one, 360? How can you quantify the resources that are going into this?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, so each agency has identified a point of contact or, I'm going to use like a special assistant to the commissioner, right, that is working on or being tasked with. So there is no increase in resources that are being added. It is utilizing existing personnel to go through the process. Agencies may have a different framework set up as they maybe have their divisions involved with a point of contact. I can't speak to each and every agency, but the intent is that you're utilizing your existing resources to go through this process.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a good start. So that's 15 agencies times 2,000 work hours, so 30,000 hours a year. You mentioned Department of Law. You mentioned into the divisions. What additional resources have been diverted to this in those places?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, they're diverting resources, using existing resources, reprioritizing work, I think is how I would classify that. I don't know that I would say we're adding staff to do this. We are using existing staff within the Department of Law to develop a team that is the expert on ensuring that we're all following a standard process and streamlining that process to make sure that we're lessening the amount of regulations out there.
Senator Keel.
Sure. No, I understand there was no increment, but my assumption is that those lawyers weren't twiddling their thumbs all day before 360 came out. Mm-hmm. So there's an opportunity cost, right? And certainly, I don't know about every division in state government, but the attorneys bill their time. Can you sort of help us understand? I'm trying to get a sense of what's going by the wayside so that this can be done.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, it's going to be on a case-by-case basis, depending on each department and what they're doing or what they're previously been tasked with. I can't speak to every single department. I would have to inquiry with every single one on what they're doing. So I don't have a clear number for you to give you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I guess not thrilled that we don't know what we're spending, had a conversation with somebody who discussed a similar exercise at the beginning of the administration's first term. How did the results of that exercise inform the beginning of this one? How were they used?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I was not part of that process, so I can't speak to that. I can follow up with our deputy chief of staff. She is Rachel Bylsma is working on this project more closely. I'm more closely involved with the Administrative Order 359, so I can have her reach out to your office if you'd like to talk directly with her about the process that was gone through, or we can follow up in writing with the committee.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that'd be helpful because it sounds like a pretty substantial amount of work has been shifted from what folks were doing to doing this, and I know that it was done once before. So it'd be good to know. I guess the last question is, I know at the end of that 2019 process, a lot of departments said, well, we've changed the regulations. We've done what we could. We could do more if the law changed. Do you anticipate bills being brought forward to the legislature as a result of this effort?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, it's a possibility. I don't want to say no that there isn't. I think as the departments go through, you know, obviously you're going to look at the maybe lower hanging fruit. Somebody had mentioned that there is a regulatory requirement for a document to be transmitted through telegraph. Well, I don't know anyone nowadays that goes through that process. So, you know, I think it's going to depend, and it will be a case-by-case basis depending on the department.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Thank you. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Sanders, this sort of stuff on this page, I think a lot of folks know it's there are things that I'm really interested in. Other than the AO in each case, respectively 359 and 360, is there a framework or is there a plan of work or anything that helps get kind of into the process and the results? And we have some targets here, and I'm just wondering, you know, usually when planning an improvement project, you have kind of some stated objectives, and then you have some processes around doing it, you know, with the hoped for end result and how that will be measured. I mean, that telegraph requirement, I mean, nobody's doing it anyway, so it's probably not slowing down any work while somebody runs around looking for a Western Union office. But, so just the effort and then the expected benefits of it, it would be nice to see what kind of management framework there is around that. And that would, I think, get to some of the questions about resources that are being put to it. So the plan of work and, you know, the desired objectives and how it's going so far.
Yep. Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, absolutely there is a framework outlined. And there are plans that my understanding is at the beginning of February, I think it's the 3rd of February, the agencies will be posting each of their plans online. So those will be publicly available as well on an agency-by-agency basis. But, yes, there is a framework developed. There is, you know, guidance that the Department of Law has been working on to ensure that we are doing things consistently and following a process that's outlined with our Department of Law also and engaged in that process.
Thank you.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up. One example, I've previously passed a piece of legislation that gives a provision for the administration to propose unnecessary duplicated redundant reports or reports that are required in some format that's not useful. And so, you know, we've got in statute that provision to produce that report in the form of a legislative proposal that we can reduce doing things that we don't need to do, not only the wasted production and transmission, but the intellectual property, the time required to develop all that information if no one's really using it. Mm-hmm. So that remains there as an open opportunity to reduce unnecessary work.
Through the chair, Senator Kaufman, yes, and that report is updated biannually. So
I have two issues. One, regarding the Department of Law, the state has filed suit on the Katie John issue on several occasions and have lost miserably. I would like to see how much money we've spent on fighting this case and possibly other cases. If you're talking about the best and wisest use of our dollars, it would seem to me that we wouldn't be throwing those dollars away at cases that I believe that we will not win. So that is the first issue, and I plan on following up with that and the record that the Department of Law has had on this case and on other cases. And I don't believe that their record is stellar. The second point that I would like to address that is semi-related to the budget process is what's happening in was the most highly rated educational system that we have, and that is Mount Edgecombe. I've had several conversations with the senator that that represents this area, and he has expressed concern that something is happening there, and I'm wondering if the administration could take a look at what's happening to that educational system, because it seems as though it needs some drastic attention. As I said, it has been one of the highlights, the stars of our educational system, and I wonder if Senator Stedman might comment on that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, there is a concern. I don't know what's going on there. We haven't dealt into it yet, but it is something's going on. We just need to find out what it is and fix it. And, you know, when we have a school that's one of our top performers, we don't want to have it deteriorated. So we'll work with your office and Department of Ed as we, you know, go through that process, because I can't sit here and tell you what the issue actually is, because I don't know.
Can you go over the student count numbers that give you concern?
Well, there's roughly about 430 kids, somewhere in that range, 440, at Mount Edgecombe High School. And it's normal to have some turnover. Kids that don't come back might get homesick or have an issue or whatever. But it seems to be an extremely high number this year. I've heard numbers that are pushing 100, which would be a quarter of the school almost. I need to get that verified by the department, exactly what's going on. And if there's kids not returning and other kids coming in, I want to know that too. I don't want to have it like when you ask a banker how many of your loans are in arrears and they tell you no and they're going broke because they've renegotiated all the loans, right? One of those games. Not interested in that. There's concern from a lot of the students on some of the recreation issues. It's a boarding school, right? You've got to have things for the kids to do. Yeah, especially the boys, to make sure they have less energy to in the evening than more, and supervision. So those conversations, I think, are coming. We've asked the department that we'd like to have a conversation with the superintendent and the department. Obviously, the superintendent answers to the department, so we understand the pecking order. I don't really, I'd mentioned, I don't know what the issue is. We just need to get it defined and fix it, because we need to not having our education attention redirected to the schools that are successful. We need to pay attention to the schools that are unsuccessful, or we want their success increased, right? We want to have the education system go forward. So something's going on, and we'll hopefully work with you, your office and the Department of Ed to figure that out and then come up with a solution.
Ms. Sanders, do you have a comment?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman and Senator Hoffman, or Chair Hoffman, to your earlier remarks, happy to follow up with AG Cox and obtain some information and details related to the cases that you noted, and Senator Stedman, happy to follow up with Commissioner Bishop. I am not privy to those conversations, but we can definitely provide student count information to the committee, and we'll make her aware that you would like to have those conversations.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. Members of the committee, do you have any questions or comments at this time? Senator Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go back to the geodifference study, which is, I know I've voiced this concern with the administration. So, you know, this is my sixth year. So the last study was in 2008. And even I had no inkling in my body about being in the legislature, but it was very concerning because I represent a very rural district and the geo difference is zero in many of my rural communities. And that's part of the reason we can't keep people there, especially when there's a private job that pops up. They just shoot right away because we're not even totally competitive at all. So I don't think anybody can agree that coming on 18 years from the last study is efficient enough to, you know, without changes that we've seen in the economy over even just in the last 10 years, that this is really fair to employees across the state. So I would really hope that the administration would maybe possibly look at this and try to get some funding for this study.
Through the chair, Senator Kronk, you know, as I noted, it's not in the budget currently. If the legislature decided to appropriate money towards this project, the Department of Administration would implement the study, but resources are very limited right now. And so that item did not raise to the level of priority of meeting our statutory or contractual obligations.
Further questions? Senator Stedman.
Just to highlight that, I agree the OMB director doesn't fit the statutory obligations. I think we understand that. And we can appropriate money, fix the problem, and the administration could take it out of the budget. So that money then would be better spent somewhere else. Generally speaking, across all items, including the capital budget, the money is so tight, let's come up with items in the budgets that the administration agrees and the legislature agrees, so we get as much done as we can. One of the concerns I have with the issue brought up by Senator Gronk is when we get this big project coming at us, they're going to pay whatever wage scale they have to pay to have 8,000 or 16,000, I assume everybody has two hands, working on that project. And we're going to have to compete against it, not only the state, but all private employers. So that doesn't go unnoticed. And if it's equipment operators, the truck drivers at the state level, they'll be easy targets for 2-3 years of all the work they can stand at very high wages. And they're going to have to pay a rate to attract these folks out of Texas and North Carolina and North Dakota and any place else, Pennsylvania, anywhere there's a guy that can pass a chemical test and a gal that can pass a chemical test. So we might want to have those conversations to take a look at some of that stuff, or we're going to be caught flat-footed.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman and Senator Kronk, yes, happy to have those conversations as we develop what the ultimate budget will look like.
Thank you, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Kronk is correct. I'll also just remind the committee that last year we got the results of a statewide salary study and showed we were pretty far behind on a lot of what we pay state workers without regard to geographic differential. I would have to dig back in my notes, but I think the Commissioner of Administration told us about $200 million statewide for full implementation. So, and I don't think I saw even a phased implementation in this budget. So we have a ways to go. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there's time. There's an appendix slide here on the 10-year plan that has a very interesting new revenue measures line. I'd be interested in the details on what's included in that.
I was going to ask Director Sanders to give her closing comments and address the two appendices if she would like to. Ms. Sanders?
Thank you for that, Chair Hoffman. Senator Keel, yes. So at the back of the bill, or excuse me, at back of the presentation, we provided just a snapshot of the 10-year fiscal outlook that was included in the December 11th budget. During the governor's State of the State, he started to remark about the fiscal plan, comprehensive fiscal plan that he has introduced. So I believe there is legislation that has been transmitted to the legislature, at least to the Senate, that involves multiple components of the governor's fiscal plan. And I'll just briefly touch on them at a very, very high level. So the governor's approach to a comprehensive fiscal plan is one that would not be a tax and spend. There are several components, including things like the constitutional amendment for the permanent fund dividend that was introduced. There is a spending cap bill, statutory spending cap bill that was introduced. There is a government sunset review board or committee, I can't remember specifically off the top of my head, which one that went towards with the function of ensuring that the work that the departments are engaged in on an annual basis or a rotating basis is meeting the needs of the state. And then there are some revenue components associated with it. He has included a seasonal sales tax. So that seasonal sales tax would be a higher rate during the summer months and a lower rate during the fall and the winter months. There are other components to it in, that touch on the corporate income tax. And then lastly, there is a change in the production floor tax for the oil and gas production, changing that rate temporarily. I would note, you know, I've kind of touched on it in the committee meeting as we've talked today about this five-year period where we are looking at you know, reduced revenues to the state to meet our operational needs. And once we get past that time frame, we start to see things projects escalate and bring revenue into the state. So this comprehensive package addresses the new revenues line on line 7 of the slide before you through a combination of measures and looking forward to what oil and gas production as well as projected oil costs will be in the state. So very, very high level. I know that those pieces of legislation will be before the committee. I'm happy to help present and coordinate communication on that messaging to the committee and providing explanation on what that looks like in the modeling.
Thank you for that. That concludes the business of the committee today. Our next meeting will be tomorrow, well, Tuesday, January 27th at 9 a.m. We will be going over the governor's FY26 veto overview. Seeing nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned.